William plays Santa Claus. William walked slowly and thoughtfully down the village street. It was the week after Christmas. Suddenly he saw someone coming towards him. It was Mr. Solomon, the superintendent of the Sunday school of which William was a reluctant member. William had just heard that Mr. Solomon was going to form a band from the elder boys of the Sunday school. William confronted him.
"Afternoon, Mr. Solomon," he said.
Mr. Solomon looked him up and down with distaste.
"Good afternoon, my boy," he said icily. "I am on my way to pay a visit to your parents."
This news was not encouraging. William turned to accompany him and boldly broached the subject of the band.
"Here you're getting up a band, Mr. Solomon," he said casually.
"I am," said Mr. Solomon, more icily than ever.
"I'd like to be a trumpeter," said William, still casually.
"You have not been asked to join the band," went on Mr. Solomon, "and you will not be asked to join the band."
"Oh," said William politely.
They walked on.
"I'm going," continued Mr. Solomon, "to complain to your parents of your shameful behaviour on Christmas Eve when you were supposed to be carol singing."
"Oh, that," said William, as though he remembered the incident with difficulty. "I remember. We sort of lost you, didn't we?"
He and the outlaws had, in fact, spent the evening in glorious lawlessness. Mr. Solomon turned in at the gate of William's home, and William accompanied him with an air of courage that was derived solely from the knowledge that both his parents were out. He went round to the side of the house. His companion went up the front steps, rang the bell, and was invited in to tea by Ethel, William's grown-up sister. William had forgotten that Ethel was at home nursing a cold. Ethel happened to be in the temporary and, for her, very rare position of being without a male admirer on the spot. Everyone seemed to have gone away for Christmas. Mr. Solomon was not, of course, a victim worthy of Ethel's bow and spear, but he was better than no one. Therefore she gave him tea and smiled upon him. He sat blushing deeply and gazing in rapt adoration at her blue eyes and Titian red hair. He had not even dared to tell her the real object of his visit, lest it should prejudice her against him. William went indoors, assumed his most guileless expression, and entered the drawing-room. He sat down upon a chair next to Mr. Solomon. After a silence, Ethel spoke without enthusiasm.
"Mr. Solomon has very kindly come to make sure that you're none the worse after your little outing on Christmas Eve."
William turned his gaze upon Mr. Solomon. Mr. Solomon went pink and nearly choked over his tea. Demoralized by Ethel's beauty and sweetness of manner, he had indeed substituted for his intended complaint a kindly inquiry as to William's health. William made no comment.
"That's very kind of him, isn't it, William?" said Ethel rather sharply. "You ought to thank him."
"Thank you," he said, in a tone in which Mr. Solomon perceived, quite plainly, mockery and scorn. Another silence fell. Suddenly the clock struck five, and Mr. Solomon started up.
"Oh, good heavens," he said. "I must go. I ought to have been there by five."
"Where?" said Ethel.
"At the school. It's the old folks' Christmas party. I was to give out the presents, the mixed infants party, too. I should have been at the old folks' to give their presents at five, and with the mixed infants at 5:30. I'm afraid I shall be terribly late."
He looked about frantically.
"Oh, but can't someone else do it for you?" said Ethel. "It seems such a shame for you to have to run off as soon as you've come."
Mr. Solomon looked into Ethel's blue, blue eyes and was lost.
He didn't care who gave away the presents to the old folks and the mixed infants. He didn't care whether anyone gave them away. All he wanted to do was sit in this room and be smiled upon by Ethel.
It came to him suddenly that he'd met his soul's mate at last.
"Isn't there anyone who'd do it for you?" said Ethel again, sweetly.
He thought for a minute.
"Well, now I'm sure the curate wouldn't mind doing it," he said at last. "I've often taken his boys' club for him."
"Well, William could take the message to him, couldn't he?" said Ethel.
"Glorious idea. It would kill two birds with one stone. It would prolong this wonderful tete-a-tete and get rid of this objectionable boy."
Mr. Solomon smiled upon William almost benignly.
"You'll do that, won't you, William?"
"Yes," said William obligingly.
"Certainly."
"Listen very carefully to me, then, dear boy,"
said Mr. Solomon. "Go to Mr. Green's house and ask him if he'd be kind enough to take over my duties for this afternoon, as I'm unable to attend to them myself. Tell him that the two sacks containing the gifts for the old folks' party and the mixed infants' party are in my rooms. The larger of the two is the old folks' party presents. He'll find in my rooms also a Father Christmas costume, which he should wear for giving the old folks' presents, and a Pied Piper costume for giving the mixed infants' presents."
William walked slowly down the road to Mr. Solomon's rooms. He had decided, after all, not to call upon the curate. He had decided, very kindly, to perform Mr. Solomon's two little duties himself. He was most anxious to be admitted to Mr. Solomon's band as a trumpeter, and he thought that if Mr. Solomon found his two little duties correctly performed by William, his heart might be melted, and he might admit William as a trumpeter to his band. Moreover, there is no denying that the thought of dressing up as Father Christmas and the Pied Piper, and distributing gifts to old folks and mixed infants, appealed very strongly indeed to William's highly developed dramatic instinct. Mr. Solomon's housekeeper admitted him without question, and a few minutes later William staggered across to the school with two large sacks and two large bundles over his shoulders. He found a small classroom to change in. It was intensely thrilling to put on the Father Christmas beard and wig and the trailing red cloak edged with cotton wool. He then carefully considered the two sacks. Why should the old folks have a larger sack than the mixed infants, he thought. He shouldered the smaller sack, therefore, and set off to the old folks' party. As he entered, old folks in various stages of old ages sat round the room talking to each other complainingly. They were engaged in discussing among themselves the inadequacy of the tea, the uncomfortableness of the chairs, the piercingness of the draught, and the general dullness of the party.
"'Tisn't what it used to be in my young days,'
one old man was saying loudly to his neighbours. At the sight of William with his sack, they brightened. A perspiring young man and woman hurried down to him eagerly. "'Oh, so glad to see you,' they gasped. "'You're awfully late. I suppose Mr. Solomon sent you with the things?' Not much of William's face could be seen through the beard and wig, but what could be seen signified assent.
"'We'll do begin to give them out,' said the young man. "'It's simply ghastly. They won't do anything but sit round and grumble. I hope you've got plenty of tea and baccy. That's what they like best.'
William began, and it was not until he had presented an outraged old man with a toy engine that it occurred to him that it had been perhaps a mistake to exchange the two sacks. But having begun, he went doggedly on with his task. He presented to the old men and women around him dolls and tin motor cars and little wooden boats and garish little picture books and pencil cases, all presents laboriously chosen by Mr. Solomon for the mixed infants. The old folks were amazed and indignant. But there was something of satisfaction in their indignation. Something fresh to grumble at was almost in the nature of a godsend. William gathered from the homicidal expressions with which the helpers were watching him that it would be as well to retire as hastily as possible. He handed his last present, a child's paint-box, to an old woman by the door, and departed almost precipitately. Then the storm broke out, and a torrent of shrill indignation pursued his retreating form. He changed into the Pied Piper costume, retaining his Father Christmas beard and wig in order the better to conceal his identity. Then he shouldered his other sack, and a few moments later he flung open the door of a room in which a few dozen mixed infants gambled half-heartedly at the bidding of their conscientious helpers. A little cluster of mothers sat at the end of the room and watched them proudly. The mixed infants, seeing him enter with his sack, brightened and broke into a thin, shrill cheer. A helper came down to greet him.
"'Oh, how good of you to come,' she said gushingly. "'The procession first, of course. The children know just what to do. We've been rehearsing it.'
The mixed infants were already getting into line. The helper motioned William to the head of it.
"'Twice round the room, you know,' said the helper, "'and then distribute the presents.'
William began very slowly to walk round the room, his sack on his shoulder, his train of mixed infants prancing joyously behind. William's brain was working quickly. He had a strong suspicion that he would soon be distributing packets of tea and tobacco to a gathering of outraged mixed infants. His hopes of being admitted into Mr. Solomon's band faded. Then, suddenly, he decided not to await meekly the blows of fate. Instead, he'd play a bold game. The mothers and helpers were surprised when suddenly William, followed by his faithful band, walked out of the door and disappeared from view. But an intelligent helper smiled brightly and said, "Oh, how thoughtful! He's just going to take them once round the school outside. I expect quite a lot of people are hanging about, hoping for a glimpse of them." "Who is he?" said a mother. "I thought Mr. Solomon was to have come." "Oh, it's probably one of Mr. Solomon's elder Sunday school boys. He told me once that he believed in training them up in habits of social service. He's a wonderful man. Yes, I'm sure he'd have come if some more pressing duty hadn't detained him. The dear man's probably reading to some poor invalid at this moment." At that moment, as a matter of fact, the dear man had got to the point where he was earnestly informing Ethel that no one had ever, ever, ever understood him in all his life as she did. It wasn't until several minutes later that frenzied mothers and helpers poured out into the playground. It was empty. They poured out into the street. It was empty. Everything was empty. The old legend had come true. A Pied Piper, followed by every mixed infant, had vanished completely from the face of the earth. Ethel had just sneezed, and Mr. Solomon was just thinking how much more musically she sneezed than anyone else he had ever met, when the mothers and helpers burst in upon them. They took in the situation at a glance, and never again did Mr. Solomon recapture the pedestal from which that glance deposed him. But the immediate question was the mixed infants.
But Mr. Green came to give the presents," gasped Mr. Solomon. "It was Mr. Green."
"It certainly wasn't Mr. Green," said a helper tartly. "It was a boy. We thought it must have been one of your Sunday school boys. We couldn't see his face plainly because of his beard."
A feeling of horror stole over Mr. Solomon. With a crowd of distracted mothers at his heels, he returned to the school and conducted a thorough and systematic search. No mixed infants. The attitude of the mothers was growing hostile. They evidently looked upon Mr. Solomon as solely responsible for the calamity.
"Sit in there," muttered a mother fiercely. "Sit in there dallying with red-haired females while our children was being stole. Nero!"
"Herod," said another, not to be outdone in general culture.
"Crippin,"
said another, showing herself more up to date. The perspiration was pouring from Mr. Solomon's brow. It was like a nightmare.
I'll go and look round the village," he said desperately. "I'll go to the police. I promise I'll find them."
"You'd better," said someone darkly.
He tore in panic down the road. He tore in panic up the nearest street. And then, suddenly, he saw William's face looking at him over a garden gate. "Hello," said William.
Do you know anything about those children?" panted Mr. Solomon.
"Yes," said William calmly.
"If you'll promise to let me be a trumpeter in your band, you can have 'em. Will you?"
Yes, yes," spluttered Mr. Solomon.
"On your honour?" persisted William.
Yes," said Mr. Solomon. "Yes."
"And Ginger and Henry and Douglas, all trumpeters?"
"Yes,"
said Mr. Solomon desperately. It was at that moment that Mr. Solomon decided that not even Ethel's charm would compensate for having William for a brother-in-law.
"All right," said William. "Come round here."
He led him round to a garage at the back of the house and opened the door. The garage was full of mixed infants having the time of their lives, engaged in mimic warfare under the leadership of Ginger and Douglas with ammunition of tea leaves and tobacco. Certainly the mixed infants were appreciating the old folks' presence far more than the old folks had appreciated the mixed infants. One of them was chewing tobacco and evidently enjoying it.
"Here they are," said William carelessly. "You can have 'em if you like. We're getting a bit tired of 'em."
No words of mine could describe the touching reunion between the mixed infants and their mothers. Neither could any words of mine describe the first practice of Mr. Solomon's Sunday school band with William, Ginger, and Henry as trumpeters. There was, however, only one practice, as after that Mr. Solomon wisely decided to go away for a very long holiday.